pledge my devotion to a meaningful life. To love in slow motion, to bathe in the bright light. Rivers in the evening, mystified by morning. And I don't know how long we have, so it's gotta be right. Thank you.
what feed mosquitoes at play. Last of the factories, first of the pantries, it was formed in the wind. It got formed in the wind. It's an echo. Not for long, it's gone towards the hill, coming back and so still.
You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Good afternoon, and welcome to UTalk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. Incorporated last year to address different needs in the community, Community Helpers Unite has three goals. Open a permitted community kitchen to upcycle food into meals, deliver free cooking and grocery classes to marginalized groups, and provide volunteer opportunities to those with barriers to employment.
So my name is Brandy Beaubier, and I am the founder and CEO of Community Helpers Unite, Inc., or CHUP, as we are called.
Brandy, what exactly is Community Helpers Unite, and what is it that you do?
So Community Helpers Unite was incorporated last year in response to a number of different needs within the community that I was able to identify from my work with the Leftovers Rescue Food Organization. I brought the Leftovers Rescue Food Organization here actually as a caterer. We started having discussions about bringing that mobile app based model that rescues food. It takes food from donors like Cisco and GFS and Red River Co-op grocery store, coffee shops like Starbucks, even like independent coffee shops and restaurants and things. Two of my favorites that came on board early were St. James Burger and Chipco and Modern Coffee. And so what we do is we take the things that they would normally be throwing out at the end of the night just because they're not good for another day to sell, but they're still perfectly good to consume. And we take those things and we redirect them to organizations that are nonprofit that are feeding people. So organizations like Mama Way and Bear Clan that are making hampers, organizations like the Sign Foundation that are upcycling foods to make meals, and like in a soup kitchen style, and organizations that do everything like feeding the public as well as feeding their residents as well as making hampers, like Andrew Street Family Center. And that way we can increase their food supplies. And the timing of it was so dynamite because there was the pandemic that hit as we were in the process of bringing the model here and like getting our startup funding. So when the pandemic hit in 2020, we were actually just in the middle of our funding proposals. So we were able to access a lot of granting that came up because of COVID and actually launched 6 months earlier than we expected to. So we launched in October of 2020. And by February, I could identify a lot of different gaps and a lot of areas where most of these organizations, regardless of what they were doing, they were struggling, or there was needs that they couldn't meet just because of money, people, and time. And so when I was asked by Riley at Initiative to help out with making sure that the community caring camp at Thunderbird House had food in February. That was kind of a wake-up call because it made me realize how bad some of this need was in these gaps that weren't being filled by other organizations. And one of the things was like being able to do one-off hampers that weren't on a regular schedule. Always having some kind of food supplies that could go out to people in an emergency need. So we started with feeding the community caring camp at Thunderbird House. We made sure that they had two hot meals a day plus coffee twice a day for up to 150 people. And it worked out amazingly. We made sure everybody had food. The people who were attending the teepees to stay warm, they always had something hot to eat and hot to drink. So it made a huge impact, like within 3 weeks that it was operating. And once it was done, we kind of all sat down and they went, Randy, this is a big food thing that like needs to get fixed. And I sat down with a couple of friends and we started planning up how we could do this on a regular basis. And they became my board and we incorporated Community Helpers Unite. And it's just literally taken off in leaps and bounds since. I'm blown away by the level of support that we've received. At the same time, it's kind of overwhelming to see how big the need is, because the people that we're helping, primarily when we work in downtown and Point Douglas and the North End, we're working with people that are marginalized, that are vulnerable, that the people that get left behind. So yeah, it's not like these people generally have another option. So we work with one of my mentors his name is Mitch Bourbonnier, and he does some of the most amazing community work here in Winnipeg and all over Manitoba, in fact. But he created and works with a group called Action Therapy and OPK. And they both organizations deal with kids that are at risk youth that are involved with CFS and their families. So one of the things that we do to provide them support is we offer hampers, last minute emergency. So if an action therapist calls me up and says, hey, Brandy, I have a wellness check I have to go do. It's like 10 o'clock at night. I have to go do a wellness check. It's a family of 10. I know that they're usually food insecure. So can I stop at the warehouse and grab a hamper? Yeah, absolutely. The answer is always yes. We make sure that we always have pantry foods. We always have something we can send to these folks, because 9 times out of 10, the issues they're having at home are because there's no food in the house. So to bring them food to the house means they don't have to take any steps further with their CFS worker once the outreach worker comes to do the wellness check. Because the next thing that happens, if they can't diffuse the situation or rectify what the problem was, is the kids get removed from the home. And that's steps in the wrong direction. So if we can utilize systems like that to stop those things from happening, then we're doing our job. Because that's one of those gaps that was just being left out of it. Because if you're an action therapy worker, how do you just go and drop $40 on groceries every few days when you go to see one of your clients? Like, it's not sustainable. But the free food being available on a 24-hour basis for when things like that happen makes all the difference. Yeah. So the way we set up our warehouse is we have a keypad on the door lock and an alarm that has the code set up for volunteers and agencies. So whenever one of these people call and say, hey, I have a family I have to go see, or hey, I've got a client who has no food in the house, no problem. They go, we have stuff ready to go, hampers that are pre-made and ready to go. And then I just direct them, here, go to this freezer for meat, go to this freezer for bread. We've got potatoes and onions over here, and your pantry bag is over here. And they go, they pick it up, they lock themselves out, they're good. I don't have to be there. So I've set up those kind of, that's one of the things that I excel in, is I set up those kind of systems so that we can do all the little things that Community Helpers Unite needs to help support all those agencies.
The work you're doing is just fantastic. It's unfortunate that we need services like this in the first place, though. I like to watch a lot of like video essays and documentaries and things like that. A lot of the data is focused on the United States, but when they're talking about, you know, food challenges, it's not that there's a lack of food out there. It's distribution networks. During the pandemic, grocery stores were hiring security guards to stop people from going through the dumpsters to get the food. And it's just ridiculous. Yep. It's like, hey, I understand there's a profit motive, but these things, like, it's already been thrown out. Like, you're going to throw it out anyways. You're not making any money off that. Why not donate it? Why not give it to organizations? But they don't want to put in that effort.
Why is food that's good going in the dumpster in the first place? It shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. You make a meal and then you have leftovers for a couple of days. Like, you put it in the freezer or something. Like, food can last a little while.
Yeah, and that's part of it. A lot of the donations, the large scale donations that we receive. So to take a step back. So in June of 2021, I resigned from Leftovers as the city league coordinator so that they could hire somebody to fill that role because Community Helpers Unite, like I said, was moving forward so quickly that I couldn't give Leftovers the time that I needed to make it succeed and be successful. We were already at an average of about 50,000 pounds of food per month being moved, and it was just growing. And I was like, well, I can't do both. So they hired a new city lead, and I was able to focus on Community Helpers Unite 100%, which is awesome, because now Julia Kramer, who's the new city lead, the second I met her, I was like, ooh, she's a doer. She's going to be so good. And so Leftovers still rents a portion of my warehouse on Jarvis. And so, like, it's great because I get to hang out with Julia and talk food rescue and make little plans with her and make solutions. You know, and then I have my warehouse coordinator, Chantel, and our admin, Haley, who are working at the warehouse as well, and they help with everything. So, like, if Julia has need for somebody to help her out with organizing some things or unloading vehicles, whatever, they're there to help. And it's like, it's a really great team. It's a great female led team.
Oh, yeah. We need more of those.
Yeah, exactly. And so with Leftovers, what we've done is we've worked it out so that Leftovers is doing the, like, Julia's doing all the Leftovers, like, app work and, like, doing all the routes and all that stuff, managing Leftovers. But then when large distribution items happen, those large distribution donations happen, and then we kind of take over and help her with that distribution. So I'm still procuring large donations and things like that. So, like, when Cisco calls us and says, hey, Brandy, we've got 70 cases of melons. They're honeydew and cantaloupes. They're coming from Guatemala, and they just got checked in at the warehouse here. They're supposed to go to Thunder Bay, but they've been over-refrigerated, so they can't go to the grocery store there. They can't sell them. So the producer in Guatemala says we should just throw them out because they won't make it back there before they've gone bad. So any other time would have gone in the garbage, like, because they don't even know what to do with them. But because we have that relationship in place with Leftovers, instead what we do is we say, yes, we will have volunteers come and pick that up. Cisco creates a route on the app. Julia looks at the route and says, oh, this is a lot of melons. Let's send it to three different agencies. And then what she'll do is she'll split that route so that the volunteers using the app that go to pick up that food from Cisco, they'll each have a different destination, or they'll have it all come back to the warehouse. And then Julia will have five agencies come to the warehouse to pick up because it's in the immediate vicinity. So that way, all of those agencies get that food instead of it going in the garbage. And it works so well.
Well, it's like a perfect symbiotic relationship at the point, just making sure every aspect is taken care of. It's like, oh, we can't handle this, but oh, these people can handle it.
Now, here's the crazy part. It's almost perfect. The one piece that's missing still is the upcycling of the foods that really can't be given out as is. But they'd still be good if you turn them into something. So, for instance, we get a call on a Friday afternoon. Most of the agencies aren't open on the weekends unless they do drop-in or emergency resources and stuff. So most agencies aren't open on the weekends. So Fridays, it's like, if you get a big, big donation, it's like, oh God, what are we going to do with that now? You know, we have like a handful of specific agencies that are open all weekend that we know we can put it on. But sometimes it's stuff that just isn't going to be good long enough, you know? So what we do is we'll use the pink tomatoes as an example. We got a call from GFS. It was a Friday, like midday. It was like already into the afternoon, and like trying to organize volunteers on a Friday afternoon is lame.
Exactly. Everyone already has their like Friday plans. They're like, oh, I'm going to a movies. Yeah. I'm already booked up.
We get a call Friday afternoon, and it's GFS, and they say, hey, we have 68 cases of tomatoes, and they're pink tomatoes. They're great for salads. They're great for roasting, but they're not going to make it the weekend. So we have to get them out today because they're not open on the weekend either.
Yeah.
We have to get them out today, but they're really like, they're going to go bad by Monday. Can you guys take them? And my immediate thought is if Mama Way and Bear Clan can take them, then yes, but otherwise we wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
That was pre-Chew, because now that Chew exists and we have a kitchen that we're using, we can take all those. We can say, yes, we'll have somebody come pick them up. We'll bring them to our kitchen. And tonight and tomorrow, we will roast them all and we will freeze them all. We'll roast them, we'll skin them, we'll freeze them, or we'll roast them, we'll freeze them, and we'll put them in soups.
Oh, exactly.
Or we'll turn them into sauce. And then package it up that way and send it out to the agencies. Or because we are operating a Chew food services now and offering food services to other organizations like Nidinoimak, which is the new warming shelter at 190 Disraeli, we're feeding 175 unsheltered relatives every day, 7 days a week, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So the way that we're able to stay within our budget for that is by offsetting it with donated food, like these tomatoes. We took these tomatoes in I believe it was the end of December. It might have been around the holidays. And we took these tomatoes and it was 68 cases. Like, that is no joke. There's 25 pounds in each case.
Wow.
They're huge. Like, it's a lot of tomatoes.
That's so many.
Right? It's a lot of tomatoes. Our staff at the kitchen, so we use Weedema Kitchen at Salvation Army on Logan, specifically to service that center, because it's only 3 minutes away, perfect for deliveries. So what we do is we have a group of students that we hired from the Tech Walk Culinary Arts program to work the evenings and weekends. So they get a bit of practicum, they get real world experience, they get to do community work at the same time because they know who they're feeding. Mm-hmm. And it works out great because they get to hone their skills. There's nothing that's going to make you faster at coring tomatoes than coring 68 boxes of tomatoes.
Exactly.
Right? And they're not going to do that in their school setting because it's controlled, right? Like, they're not. There's no way they would be doing that.
In the school, they're like, we're making this specific dish.
We're making this for the whole cafeteria, but that's it. It's not keep doing the tomatoes till all the tomatoes are gone. So we had everybody all hands on deck. We unboxed and cored all the tomatoes. They oiled them, put them on pans, roasted them off, cooled them. And then froze them in pans, like squished them and froze them in pans so that they could be, even from frozen, they could be dumped into our giant 40-gallon soup kettle and make tomato soup. All of our tomato soup that we have served to date, because we still are using the last of those tomatoes now, every time we've made tomato soup for an Adinawemak, it has been with frozen fresh tomatoes have been roasted.
Very cool.
Like, it doesn't get any more homemade than that.
Exactly. Well, it's all about tackling a problem straight on, problem solving. Mm-hmm. You have an issue, you see what resources you have available to address said issue, and then in this case, you got a bunch of tomatoes. They're going to go bad. All right. Well, we need people to feed. What do we do? Yeah, you just change them up. You can them. You put them in stews, soups. Like, you're good to go then.
We'll be right back. oppression by your allies, as opposed to your enemies. Behind the masquerade of liberty, you claim to champion freedom that you don't live in fear. We see through your facade, we see your lies.
Freedom, sir, and as a nation, democracy. We see through your facade. We see your lies. God bless your mind. But we see through a democracy.
talking a little bit about expanding the area out. Well, what can you tell me all about that?
Well, not much yet. I don't like to tell people things until I know that they're happening.
Fair enough. But, fair enough.
We are in the process right now because when Nedinawemoc started on December 1st, the plan was for it to run from December 1st till April 30th. And there wasn't really any confirmation of whether it would move forward to become a year-round center or if it always would be just a wintertime emergency shelter. So what has changed is that I don't wait for people to give me answers. So like waiting for something like that to materialize is super stressful because I have staff now. I had to hire a bunch of staff. I went from Community Helpers Unite being me, my two board members, and Chantel to now we have 24 staff total. And the six of them are full time. So the part-time staff is one thing because they're mostly students, but the full-time staff, I need to keep my ladies employed and make sure that they have that income that they can count on without having to go somewhere else or be laid off or something like that. So in preparation for April 30th coming, we have taken on other food contracts, so other food service contracts. So we're now providing the food and on-site cooking and everything at Kekanan Center, which is an Indigenous old folks home. Senior center. It's like a half assisted living and half independent living. So it's got like a 55 plus an old age facility, like long-term care. So we've now brought back cooking on site, which hasn't happened in a few years, apparently. The contract for food services had been contracted out to one of the larger for-profit organizations. And it was not going well. The quality of food had gone down, the quality of service had gone down, and all the food was being off-sited and brought in and heated and then served. So yeah, lots of preservatives, lots of processed foods, things like that that don't need to be fed to our seniors. So we've brought back in from scratch cooking and monitoring the salt levels, monitoring the sugar levels. By providing whole foods rather than processed foods.
It's not just, you know, the quality of the food changes when you're there, but it's a whole experience. Like, people can smell it. They can see people moving around. You get excited.
Exactly. That's the big thing. When I went in one day at dinner time to introduce myself to the residents, one of the guys yelled from the back, "The only thing you're missing is cooking it here so I can smell it from down the hall." And I told, at that time we were about a week away from our permit, so I said, "Don't worry," I said, "give us another week, it's coming." Next week you'll be able to smell the food from down the hall. Yeah, and now here we are, so I bet he'll be coming running down to the dining room as soon as he thinks lunch is ready. Yeah, and because it's an Indigenous old folks home, one of our mandates is to bring in more cultural foods. So bringing back wild meat. So instead of doing a roast turkey, when we decide to do a roast, we'll be doing a roast goose or a duck. Instead of doing beef stew, we're doing wild stew with moose or elk, or moose and elk and deer, you know, and things like that, and doing fish on a regular basis, like whitefish. Because those are all part of the cultural diet. And a good example is Three Sisters Soup, which is corn and beans. Three Sisters Soup, which is corn and beans and squash.
Ooh, so that sounds good.
And you can do so, like that's the base of the soup. So you can add meat to it if you want, or you can leave it as is. But it's those things that grow naturally here and that people have been eating here for thousands of years. So bringing back stuff like that, where we can control the salt, we can control the sugar, and provide them with food that reminds them of when they were young, is really cool.
That's just so amazing. Well, like foods that are part of your childhood or just, you know, part of your culture always hit different. I know for myself, I have a Mennonite background, so Mennonite foods. Yeah. I know they're not like the top tier of foods or anything. It's basically just cream and salt, but there's always like a special place in my heart.
But
like
things that take you back, right?
So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I can understand like there is. I'm going to use the word like almost a spiritual connection to like cultural foods that have this significance from your childhood or like family life.
Well, and that's the thing too, is I'm a firm believer that food is medicine, and that if people are fed well, then they will be able to work on other things in their lives. So whether that's like for the people that we're feeding, whether that's addictions or past traumas or mental health issues, all those things are a lot easier to deal with when you know that you have food, and the food that you have or the food that you're being given is good and delicious. You know, when it makes you feel like someone cares about you when you're being served good food. So that's been our main goal for feeding relatives at Ndinawemak over the last 5 months, has been just to make them feel safe and comfortable and loved.
When I was doing my research, learning a little bit about Community Helpers Unite, when I was looking on the Facebook page, it was talking about, you know, getting a community kitchen set up. Is that the one from Salvation Army, or is there like a different kind of dream plan?
There is, yes. And we've been held up around every corner possible. In our warehouse on Jarvis, we have a space where we are planning to and trying to get a kitchen built. But it has become more and more and more and more expensive. And we've had permitting issues that we've had to go through a bunch of hoops to get done. We've had engineering issues that we've had to pay extra money to get sorted out. And now we're just about there. We've been at this since about June of last year. I think May or June last year, when I first posted that we wanted to build a kitchen, and we started raising funds. Oh, and that was the other thing, was trying to get the money that we needed to build the kitchen. So now we're at the time where we've received pretty much all the money that we need. We've had a couple extra expenses come up with engineering fees and things like that, and architecture fees and stuff like that we didn't expect. But now we're just getting that last little bit in place. And because of our food contracts that we have, we're able to roll some of our extra money from other areas over, because we have our wages being paid by these food contracts, because we're putting staff onto a site. So it's easier to manage the payroll that way and make sure that everybody's paid and not out of pocket, so to speak. Like everybody's being paid by their specific contracts, so that way our general operating funds are not dipping, like not having to send some over to payroll when we're short or something like that, you know? So it's great, because we're not even fully a funded organization yet. We've just had lots of grants that I've applied for and received, and lots of city support and community support, and it's been really almost overwhelming, the response and the support level we've received. Because I mean, I always hear about nonprofits, and especially new nonprofits, struggling so hard for the first few years, and I mean, while it's been a struggle for us, it's just like, every time I don't know, maybe it's because of the intention behind what we're doing, and because I'm so open about the reasons why we're doing what we're doing and the way we're doing what we're doing. I don't know if that's why, but it just feels like every time I talk to somebody new about what we're doing, and I say, and we need funding for this, this, or this, it happens. Like, it just, the money just comes when we need it.
You've actualized it. You've brought it into existence.
It's like I'm manifesting all of it. And, you know, because our core group of staff are so heavily invested into everything they're doing, they're talking about it the same way that I am, and that gives it power. And that I think that's what's making all of this happen the way that it is, because just the right people are hearing what we're doing because we're not being quiet about it. I used to feel really like about social media and that, and about when I was just running my catering business, I used to feel like, oh, I shouldn't be posting too much because they'll feel like I'm bragging about what we're doing. Or, you know, I don't want to post about this community work that we did when I was a for-profit business. I was like, oh, I don't know if I should post about this community work we did because I don't want it to sound like, oh, look what they're doing. You know what I mean? And have people thinking that there's like, have people perceiving that there's some other motive other than just showing love and bringing about equality. You know, I was so scared that people were going to, what people were going to think about the community work that I was doing and the way that I was operating. And when I stopped caring about that and started just going, no, the more people that know about what I'm doing, more people will want to get involved. And so far it has worked out so well. And we have been able to bring in so many different volunteers and groups of volunteers. It's been outrageous. Like we don't even have to provide staff to serve the meals at the center because we have groups of volunteers that go and deliver and serve every dinner 7 days a week and lunch on the weekends too. It's amazing.
If someone wants to help out, what is Community Helpers Unite looking for right now in terms of support, and where can people go to find more information to help you out?
The thing that we need the most is financial support. We need operational funding so that we can continue all the good work we're doing. We do not have any funding for operational costs right now, like rent and utilities and vehicle expenses and fuel. Some of our salaries are paid as honorariums. So even cash donations that we can flip into honorarium money for some of our student staff, that is wonderful as well. So we have, we do have a GoFundMe link set up, but honestly, they charge us fees. So whatever. we accept e-transfers. We have all of our information is on our social media pages, either on Instagram under @wegotchu_WPG or We Got You Winnipeg. and on Community Helpers Unite Inc. on Facebook. We accept e-transfers. We can provide tax receipts for larger donations over $1,000 through the North End Community Renewal Corporation. So that would be a matter of just contacting me directly and we work out that flow through funding that we have going with them. And come summertime, we'll be looking for more volunteers because we have some new programs coming up in the summertime. Yeah. And people can just reach out to us through the social media that way as well.
If you have any stories you'd like us to share or communities we should highlight, leave a comment on our social media or reach out to us on our website. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.